That's what I want to see. All right. Gentlemen, I was wrong. We talked last week about the Murder Wing, and I was like, you know, they're fine, whatever, they'll be okay. I saw The Horrors this weekend at My Bloody Valentine. I watched as as Ryan and Tanner went Murder Wing on Murder Wing and passed for two consecutive turns on everything, and nobody moved anything. It was terrifying. Nobody even came out, like, one, they each moved a single model. It was horrifying. And then I watched Ivan go into CB, and it was Murder Wing versus Vespids. And do you know what those Murder Wing did to those Vespids?
What?
Not really anything. He got wiped, actually, pretty hard. So, so our apologies from the Vox Cascadia podcast to, for all the slander and hype we put against those darling little Murder Wing. Actually, I'm sure those were one-off games, but yeah, the Murder Wing on Murder Wing game I watched this weekend was pretty cagey, and nothing happened until Ryan messed up and got destroyed. So, but welcome everybody. So
yeah, that sounds like a good time. I wish I was there.
Yeah, I wish you were there too, buddy. So, running tournament myself for the first time. So you see, Tyler's here with us. Connor, you were at a tournament this weekend.
I was.
And you were with our guest, Grant. Grant
Rule. And I was there as well, yes.
Yeah. And so up at the, what was the name of the tournament? Love and Warhammer?
Yes, put on Love and Warhammer folks. At Blue Sky in Bremerton.
Yeah, so, and so we brought Grant on because as a former Caster King myself, I noticed that the buffs happened, and Grant had quite a run this weekend. So I want to talk to Grant about the tournament. Connor was also there too, so we can hear about Connor's mediocre showing. Yeah, so Grant, welcome. Tell everybody about yourself. Where'd you you're from the Bremerton area too, right?
Yeah, I'm living in Kitsap County anyways, which is, you know, the west side of the sound for the people who aren't around. Cool. Seattle. So across the water from Seattle.
Yeah. So how did you tell us about your nerdy journey? So what ended up with you being here on a Tuesday night talking to three other dudes about plastic war dollies?
It's more or less the same that you keep hearing. And so, like, I got into it in like middle school. I had a buddy who got me into it. Mm-hmm. But I pretty much just totally dropped it at one point after he moved away. So then, and that was probably early high school. And from that point out, I just kind of sat out until maybe towards COVID was just kind of ending. And I was just kind of craving some kind of like hobby sort of thing to do. And Warhammer sounded fun. So I got back into it then. And that was about halfway through. They had just finished the Gallodark season of second edition.
Okay.
And the rest is history, right? I just started playing around here, and now I'm even running. I'm hosting tournaments at Comics Keep, which is the other location that we do the casual play around Kitsap. We do the first Sunday of every month there.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's really popping in Washington these days. So
yeah, and even
it's Northwest almost like it's almost every weekend. It's more often you'll be able to find a tournament on a weekend that you will not be able to find a tournament.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, between you guys and Brandon's, we at least have like pretty much two monthly guaranteed, and then often Seattle has one in one of the other weekends.
Well, you're Grant, you're famous in our Discord because you're the one who, every time there's a new patch, you're the one who compiles all the changes in the PDF. So you're doing the Omnisciah's work for us and making sure that we don't have to search through a bunch of documents. You do that for us. So we appreciate that. You're also part of our Commissar Council in Kill Team Cascadia. So really, really tight on the rules. And we appreciate that too, because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing half the time. Yeah. So I just say when I'm doing rulings, I was a TO this weekend for the first time by myself. Usually I have Tyler there to be like, that's a great question, let's ask Tyler. And I had to, so I had to just lean into it and say stuff confidently. And I think I got most stuff right. I had the small brothers there to help me though with most stuff. So
I've always kind of been the rules guy. Like even back when I was playing in middle school, I was the one who actually read the rule book cover to cover. And whenever whenever we needed to know how something actually worked, I was the one that had to figure it out. And that was like that was fourth edition.
Yeah.
The rules were kind of convoluted back then. I mean, I think they kind of always are, but
some things have never changed.
Yep.
Yeah.
What was like yours?
As an 11-year-old, that was a lot to figure out all on my own. I mean, 100%. I probably did a lot of it wrong, but you know.
Yeah. What was your first army?
The first couple of boxes I bought were Chaos Space Marines, but the first actual army I built was Eldar.
Okay. Hell yeah.
Yeah, Grant, when I first met him, you know, God, 3 years ago now at this point, maybe, he was, I think, were you playing Corsairs or was it Void?
I started with Corsairs because I was doing my best to, I was trying to build up a 40K army for Eldar was the plan going into it because I didn't even know Kill Team was a thing until I showed up at the at Discordia that one day. So I got, you know, the Eldar Kill Team.
Yeah.
So I could use that to bolster my forces and I dip my toe into something until I had a viable army. But then Kill Team is
it's pretty fun. Some kind of
it's the better rule set. I don't need to go on a 40K at this point.
Yeah.
I think we can all agree on that. There's a reason we talk Kill Team, or at least pretend to.
Yeah, 10% of the time we talk Kill Team. So
yeah, but enough to call ourselves generally a Kill Team podcast.
Kill Team.
It's the most constant reoccurring topic on the podcast.
I don't know. I think there's other more topics that reoccur more. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we're just like, oh, it's a Kill Team podcast. We gotta say something about Kill Team. Let's get back to Taco Bell. Like,
just sponsor us, Taco Bell.
Yeah,
pretty much. God. Yeah. So Grant, this weekend you and Connor went to the Love and Warhammer, and you brought Kasserkin. And so, like I said, I played a lot of Kasserkin in the last edition. That was my kind of my team I mained, and I played about two games of them early this edition, and that was at the holiday event we did not this past year, the year before. And I was very, very hungover. And besides being hungover, the rules weren't that great. Kasserkin weren't in a great spot, but they seemed to have some sauce. So just tell us a little bit, like, why'd you decide to take them to the tournament this weekend? And then we'll get into we'll get into your games a little bit too.
Well, so I originally picked the team up because, well, so my experience with Kasserkin going in was like nobody in our local scene played them, even last edition. So I never really saw them on the board. There was one guy in Tacoma who I played against them once. But the rule set last edition just did not really appeal to me at all. This edition, their rule set was like even worse at the start. But the one thing that really made me get them was there were a couple of new players in the scene that they picked up Kasserkin as their first team. And I didn't realize how sick the models actually are. Like, they actually look really good when you look closely. I thought they were boring just looking from a distance, looking at like the heavy metal paint jobs, but like they're actually pretty cool models. So I picked that up just because I wanted to paint them. And so naturally I started playing them. That was about a month before the data slate where they got real good.
So you can say you're just enough of a hipster that you can't be called like, oh, you're just meta chasing or like, you know, according to right now, the meta's
chasing me. It's all right. So before the data slate, I was really, really enjoying them. I could see that it's definitely like a rock, paper, scissors sort of scenario where there were going to be a couple matchups that would just be like an impossible to break wall. And that, I mean, that's Felgor and Goremongers are the main ones. And with this newest change where they can shoot twice in an activation, I think that's exactly what they're going for, was something to deal with those teams so that you can actually take one out in a single activation.
Can you give us some of the highlights of the changes that came just most recently? So, I mean, they changed just real quick from last edition to this edition. They got rid of the elite points, which was my baby. It was like, I'm a dice fixing hoe, I realized. but they got rid of elite points. They hit on threes now, but they've been kind of like slowly getting some buffs. So what was the major changes that happened just recently in the latest data slate?
Well, so they traded elite points for skill at arms, which is like basically the same thing as what Vetguard have, where you tell them to shoot better, move faster, you know, melee better, or have, you know, survive better. You pick one of the four. The newest, well, one of the changes on the newest data slate is you get to pick two of those while your sergeant is alive. Okay. And then on top of that, all of your basic hotshot las guns, which are like a bolter profile, basically, but you can soup them up a little bit. You can shoot twice with those now, as long as you don't move in the activation.
Okay. Well, it's really, really good changes for the team, mm-hmm. you know, especially for a team that's already geared to take out elites. And we have such an elite heavy meta in generally, yeah. you know, there's no, so
they,
many
they do really mean stuff to elites for sure.
Yeah. You know, like there's so many popular teams right now that are elites. You have Nemesis Claw, you have Wolf Scouts, you know, you have Murder mm-hmm. Wing, right? Like Angels of Death, people are talking, you know, really, really good. I have yet to see it, but you know, like there's just a lot of Marine teams, a lot of 3-up armor saves. We have Sisters now too, you know. So Cassican are in a great spot to do damage to those teams, and with these buffs, it sounds like you're making it work.
Mm-hmm.
And great. Did you find you're taking the pretty much the same operatives every game, or were you swapping them out a little bit? Are you trying to lean into those since you can double shoot with the hotshot stuff? Or are you leaning more into troopers?
Well, so that was the strat when I paired into Brandon's Felgor. Ultimately, I think I took too many. I probably should have. I dropped a medic because I didn't think being able to revive out of, obviously you can't revive out of melee with the medic, so I didn't think he'd be a good pick. But now that I think about it, the revive is like the least good thing about that medic, because you stun the guy you pick up and the medic whenever you do that. Yeah. So it kind of wrecks your action economy either way. You either lose the model or you lose 2 APL. But yeah, the hotshot las guns are actually scary now. If you have everything set up so you can have severe shooting from your skill at arms faction rule, you can give yourself piercing crits with those same guns. You have a strat ploy to give yourself ceaseless under certain conditions, and you can have saturate with some equipment. With all that stuff together and you shoot twice, you're dealing like an average of 14 damage. Like that should kill a Marine. Mm-hmm. If you get both shots off. So even just your basic guy is actually pretty scary. Needs to be respected anyways.
Yeah, I was talking to Ryan Hagedorn today, and I was talking about a tournament that he's got coming up soon. Should be announced by the time this goes out. And then he was showing me that, yeah, it's like an average of 14.5 damage and like almost 60% chance to kill a Marine with the numbers of Castrican. So I'm trying to decide if I want to bring my babies back out again. So what was the mix? I mean, you basically dropped like one medic to take like two or three troopers?
I actually dropped a couple of the gunners.
Oh, really? Wow.
For that Felgor match, because... Let's see, I had a plasma and I had a grenade launcher. I didn't take a Melta because mm-hmm. ideally if I was shooting, I wanted to make sure I could be a further distance, ideally. I mean, none of that actually worked out, but I just wanted the double shooting so that I could frenzy and finish them off all in one activation. And none of that actually panned out, but that was the idea anyways. I didn't have any reps into either of those melee teams at this point. So it was basically just... Mm-hmm. You know, trial by fire, trying to prove my concept.
Well, let's talk about your games a little bit. We'll talk about, and Connor, we'll go over your games too.
Yeah.
Connor, round one, you started, and you brought Nemesis Claw. You're
all reliable, yeah.
I thought you were going to bring Wolf Scout so that you can get them nerfed so Tristan doesn't feel bad playing them.
I was thinking about it, and then I realized I couldn't find my sergeant, and I don't know where he is right now. He's somewhere on the hobby desk, so I was like, I need to find that guy. I think he... is in one of the bits box drawers or something.
How much shit do you have on your hobby desk?
A lot. My hobby desk is very busy at any given time.
Yeah, I'm looking at mine. Mine's pretty crazy.
Mine's probably worse. It's bad.
Yeah. Well, we'll measure your hobby desk sizes later.
Yeah, sure. but yeah, I brought in a Mrs. Claw.
Patrons only. You know, sign up. You know,
all these fans.
You'll get exclusive hobby desk photos. Yeah. We'll even text them to you if you're into that. Be like, hey, look what I've got on my hobby desk.
O'Connor, round one, you went into Scott and Farstalker Kinband. Farstalker Kinband actually got a little bit of a buff recently too, right? They're kind of melee monsters.
Yeah, they got a little bit better crits. I think they went from like 3-4 to 3-5, which mm-hmm. is definitely good. Like that's 8 wounds they can now threaten to kill in 2 successful hits in theory.
Yeah.
So a nice change for him.
Yeah, round one, you won 11-8. Any quick highlights from that game?
I managed to do the classic Ventriloquist swaps a guy and engage. In this case, his the Melta flamethrower guy they have. He went to activate that guy to get him out of danger. I said Vox Scream and thankfully rolled the dice I needed. So we had to pick someone else. He did some other activation and then I blew that Skinner straight to hell with just a good old bolt gun warrior.
Nice. So 1-0 at that point. And then and Grant, you're round one. You went into Max Wiggly and Ratling. Mm-hmm. So a 17-8 win. Was this open? You remember, was it open or
that was on Tomb World.
Okay. So had any highlights or how that game went for you?
I'm trying to think of how that one went exactly. I remember it was on that Tomb World map that has kind of that hallway that snakes through the middle and you can breach through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
kind of like teleporters on each side of that S.
Yeah.
So I was really worried that he was going to like teleport Ogryns through to get to me, but really it was kind of the other way around, where the teleporter was definitely more detrimental to him because I could get into his back line, and obviously he doesn't want that. I took Dominate into the Ratlings, and it paid off. He couldn't. I mean, he probably could have killed some of the guys who got the Dominate tokens, but they ended up surviving, so I could cash him out. And it was mainly I could close threat ranges that he couldn't, so I was basically in the driver's seat for most of that game, is what it felt like to me.
Do you have TAC Ops that you had been leaning on, or did you mix them up? So they're still
I do play Dominate a lot, actually. Really? Yeah, Dominate's probably my favorite. Into elites, I wouldn't take that. It's generally more like Envoy or Martyrs into elites.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my most common picks. Banner, very map dependent, obviously.
Yeah,
and then I guess Route can work into things like stealth suits, where you really can dive into their backline real easy and mm-hmm. get 2 points right away.
Now, do you have what about equipment? What's your go-to equipment for a caster? Are you taking a lot of the all the faction stuff?
I'm always taking Relics of Cadia and Combat Daggers. I don't think there's a single game where I haven't. The scopes are better now because they can trigger your piercing crits from the one ploy, and then they give you access to Relentless. So the scopes give you Saturate if you're shooting at a distance longer than 6 inches or more. So you only get piercing crits if your enemy can't retain cover saves. It used to be if they were in cover period, you don't get it, but now the Saturate can trigger the piercing crits.
Okay.
And it can also give you access to Relentless when you're shooting. It's the same conditions where if they can't retain cover saves, then you can use the ploy. Okay. So I've been taking the scopes more often now. Before, it was a never take for me.
Yeah.
And then I just have the last slot for usually barricades or smokes or something like that.
That makes sense. I was trying to figure out, I was looking through the rules. I haven't really looked at Caskin much this edition at all, but I was looking through the rules and I was trying to figure out how, because a lot of it says like if they can't retain a cover save. And so I was trying to figure out what like do you just have to get really good angles on them? But it makes sense that if you take stuff like that and get the Saturate, that's going to
gonna
trigger that a lot.
Yeah, foregrips are a thing, but I think we have enough access to rerolls, and while we're hitting on threes, that I don't think the accurate one really matters as much. Like, if we're hitting on fours, that accurate one's a big deal, but when you're hitting on threes and you have access to Ceaseless most of the time, you usually don't need it.
Yeah. Well, those two, you got to get within 3 inches. Do you find yourself, like, inside 3 inches shooting people? I don't know if I want to be that close.
Yes, that is... You are getting that close most of the time.
Okay. Yeah.
With the gunners anyways.
Yeah. So, do you have kind of a basic strategy that you employ when you're playing on Kaskin, because something just kind of like, because I when I play Rekkas, I kind of do the same thing. I run my squigs out, I run my my melee up, and then I have my gunners just kind of sitting back there. Did you adapt to a lot of stuff, or was it pretty much like you kind of had a like some set moves that you started off with?
So the general idea for me is I'll actually take the gunners and put them in the front, and I send them as missiles to kill ready operatives.
Okay.
My philosophy is, as Kazurkin, you're in the driver's seat as long as you have last activation, because you can do some really mean shit with the seize the initiative if you get to go last on top of that. If you're going against a team that has like 10 or 11 operatives, you want to send your ready operative out to kill their ready operative. Even if it's like a gunner that gets killed in return, I think it's more valuable to have that last activation that you can turn into, you know, a seize the initiative next turn. Mm-hmm. So the gunners go out first, and then you got the rest of the guys with the hotshot las guns. They stay a little further back. They make use of the scopes. And so once you're not running elimination pattern, which is what gives you piercing crits to the las guns, until most of your gunners are dead. And they will die.
Yeah, it sounds like you're using this kind of just to, like you said, missiles. They're going out there, right, getting a kill and maybe dropping a martyr token potentially, or...
Yeah.
Softening some people up at the very least. I just had some. Are you keeping like your comms and then your sergeant kind of near the back? Because I'm assuming you want to keep the sergeant. I used to like run the sergeant out, especially when elite points didn't matter. I'd get the sergeant up quick because you had a plasma. I'm assuming you run the plasma chainsword on the sergeant.
Well, I have both built, but it's usually plasma chainsword.
Yeah.
But for me, I like to keep the sergeant a little further back so that he's the only guy who's really capable of digging your guys out of melee if somebody tries to give him a tactical hug. So I want to make sure he's not the one getting charged. Like somebody will charge one of my gunners, for example, and beat him down to one wound. And then I'll have my sergeant charge in and then kill that guy with combat support. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really important to keep your sergeant alive now that you get, he's crucial for your faction role to get, you get two of those abilities. And that is really good, getting two of the skill at arms rather than just one.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, and you get it all the time basically, so skill at arms are a strategic ploy. You get the skill at arm, you get to choose one.
Well, it's a faction role, so it doesn't cost CP.
Gambit, excuse me. Actually. Yeah. 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 Strategic gambit. So you get one all the time. And then if your sergeant's still alive, you get a second one for free. And then the sergeant can also for zero AP, can throw a third one on someone.
Yeah. He can pick any of your guys on the battlefield, no visibility or range, and give them a third skill at arms. Or you also have a strat play called clearance sweep, where if you're within 5 inches of a token, which you can place anywhere, and you're shooting a target who's also within 5 inches of that token, you get ceaseless. So placing that token is key to, you know, making your shooting reliable. You can either hand out a third skill at arms with your sergeant, or you can move that token. It's a free action to do that.
Cool. Yeah, they sound like they've got some really interesting play now. They seem like they're much more interesting than at the start of this edition. So
for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mark Perez had them there too, and his first game he was 21-5 against Rekka Crew. Oof.
Yeah.
No. So your second game, you had you went into Connor's favorite team, Battleclade, 21-7 win. How did you feel? How was that game? Because I feel like that's especially with their network counteract, it seems like there'd be a lot of stuff going on in that game.
Yeah, so that one it kind of came down to that was a Vulcus map where the big stronghold was right in the middle, and there's an objective. The center objective is right in the middle of it. And my opponent staged a whole cluster of dudes. He had his Technoarch and three of his servitors. It was the Medic, the Breacher, and a Flamer. All in a line there. So at the end of turning point one. And I set up both my grenade launcher and the hotshot volley gun. So both of my, you know, AoE threats right across from them. And he ended up winning initiative, but he had to bring his leader forward to try to handle that threat. and it didn't even pay off for him. The dice didn't work, and actually my medic ended up picking up a guy anyways. Or I guess he got the dice he needed, but my medic just revived the volley gun. But then I still got my blast off on the three servitors who were left, and ended up with another multi shot later in the turn. And from there, the game was just kind of sealed.
Do you find yourself bringing the hotshot volley much? Because I don't think I ever took it ever when I was playing last edition.
Yeah, I mean, as long as I'm not into Felgor or Goremongers, I'm going to take all four gunners. I don't really take the sniper. I'm usually dropping that guy, although he has some cool utility on CZ Initiative. I guess I should probably clarify how that works to any listeners who don't know. So CZ Initiative is a firefight ploy where if you don't have initiative, you can spend a CP to do a 1 AP action on one of your dudes at the start of the turn. You can't flip your order, though. So if you're trying to shoot somebody, you have to be on engage already, unless you're the sniper, because his first shot is silent. So that's his one utility. In my eyes, the only reason to take him is for that.
Sounds like that's probably why it's important to go last too, because you have to be on engage to do it, because you can't flip your order.
Yes,
that makes sense. I was wondering why. I mean, it's always good to go last and go first, but yeah, that makes sense there too.
Okay, so picture this. This is the play into Marines. You'll go through turning point two, and you leave your Melta ready until the very end. You want him to be last. And say they're staging, they could even be being kind of cagey, but you can't really hide from Kazurkin when they have their 10-inch, you know, move dash and then shoot somebody. So your Melta is going to go last. He's going to go over. He's going to go kill a Marine. When the next turn comes around, you have your strat phase dashes from relocate. So you can take that Melta who just killed a Marine. You can dash him over to another target to either clear their cover line or get within two, and then seize the initiative to kill another Marine. And then that guy's still ready going into the turning point. So the opponent still needs to take your guy out, or you're probably going to go kill another one.
Yeah, slight spoiler for my game four. I went up against Kazurkin and had this exact same situation play out. And I was like, okay, seize the initiative, Melta. You brought me to one health. At least he can't shoot, right? And they're like, no, he can still absolutely shoot. It's like, motherfucker, how do you put these guys down?
So, well, let's, Connor, we haven't talked about your game two yet, right?
No.
So Connor's game two, into Angels of Death, actually. So 15-1 win against Stefan. So here's your example, Tyler. Here's the Angels of Death meta that you were talking about. Connor beat him by 14 points.
Yeah, just game two. Stefan's a pretty great guy. Just unfortunately, somewhat less experienced Kill Team player, and didn't quite realize the danger of the Ventrilocar plus my Melta Gunner. At turn one, he just moved a guy just up in with enough range with a move and a dash. I could get within six with the Ventrilocar, make him dash out into the middle of the open, and my Melta said hello and blew his heavy gunner away. And then he positioned pretty aggressively on a vantage point. Near a ladder I had, and at the bottom of that ladder was my Screecher, and my Screecher at the start of turn two killed one Marine entirely and brought another Marine down to a single wound. He essentially lost four Marines by two activations into turning point two, all said and done, and I kind of just was able to, you know, mop up from there.
All right, so maybe not the best example for Tyler for what the AOD can do, because yes, I do keep hearing the AOD are a monster now.
Yeah, the double bonuses on their chapter tactics or whatever it's called seems pretty good. But I think this, unfortunately, there's still a team that has like a lack of tech and trick that makes them very straightforward. So if you know what the team can do, a couple extra bonuses isn't going to necessarily make them strong, especially for Nemesis Claw, which is like your dream matchup, Angel of Death, because then you get super relentless.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's just a stat check. For a lot of teams, right? They always have been. Like, it's just they're good at everything. They always have been good at everything, and now they're more good at everything.
Grant, what do you think about AOD, where they sit right now?
I think they're good. They're not my favorite Marine team, obviously. I lean more towards the Chaos ones, but like AOD, since then, I don't think the newest data slate, being able to bring the heavy gunner, I haven't been able to experience firsthand exactly what that feels like when they have both the sniper and the heavy gunner. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I would still even take the guy. I think the assault interceptors are just so much better.
Yeah.
But yeah, they can do everything. If you're running a lot of assault interceptors, and like the one that the chapter tactic that really surprises me is sharpshooter. And yeah, you put it on that, you want it for your assault interceptors, because like you'll end up in combat with somebody, and then going into the next turn, you'll finish them off with a fight, and now you have your it's severe, right? From sharpshooter. Mm-hmm. To trigger your piercing crits on the pistols, and their shooting like really hurts when you have that.
Yep.
They always take me by surprise a little bit when I play against them.
100%.
I'm trying to get to Spain because Jenna wants to go to Spain, and so I'm trying to figure out what the hell. I'm trying to figure out what the hell team to play. So, Yeah, again, like I said, selfishly, like one, wanted to talk to you, but also two, I want to see what Caster King are doing, because if my baby, maybe my Caster Kings are back, who knows? So, Connor, you're round three. You went into Barry, and against Death Watch. How was that one?
Rough. I messed up with my deployment of barricades and realized in the turn two, moving on to the center point, it was a Tomb World map that I had no cover, and that I kind of forgot guard was a thing, which was really stupid, because he moved two guys into the room and went in guard. I'm like, I'm not able to contest this point at all, which was brutal. So I lost a lot of guys. It was looking pretty rough. And then my Screecher, again, that throughout the entire tournament was MVP as hell, managed to do another 2-for-1 and took 3 damage in return, 3 or 4 damage. Like, literally wiped his super plasma guy, who took no damage in return, and killed the Watchmaster, taking a single hit back. And I was feeling pretty good. It was really good. Managed to bring, like, from the bottom of the pit to, like, all right, maybe we can do this. And then he just busted open the door and shot the Screecher dead. It was a great game, super fun, super swingy, but unfortunately just me not putting the cover in the right spot cost the game, because I lost too many free wounds for nothing back, essentially.
Yeah. Well, at this point, you're 2-1.
Yep.
Me and Nick are disappointed.
I mean, I'm so sorry.
Because we're Nick, for as little as Nick actually like plays Kill Team, when there's a tournament going on with one of us in it, he's
like my little coach on the sidelines. Yeah, he's like following it, like asking what the score was and everything. It's great.
Yeah. Grant, and this was actually, you teased this game a little bit before. Your round three was Casterkin versus Brandon Bean, Connor's dad, and Felgor Ravagers.
Yeah, which is probably one of my worst matchups, right?
Yeah.
Basically, this one was just a dice miracle. I got to put it down to that. Like, I actually do feel like I had a solid plan for once. Like, usually when I fight Bean, like, my plan falls apart immediately. And this time it sort of worked, but not without the back. Like, I needed the backup of the dice there. And I got everything I needed, and he never did, is basically how it panned out. But it was a super fun game. I always have such a good time playing him, and I always learn so much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, dice are a thing, and there's a little bit of randomness to this game. And so I have to say thank you, because as someone who took Casterkin against Brandon Bean with a golden ticket on the line and fell flat on my fucking face, I thank you for thank you for taking him out. I know it wasn't worth a golden ticket, but I feel like it's a little bit of a victory for me there. So,
yeah.
it's possible, like, now.
Yeah.
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 But it was a hilarious game, because, like, almost all of my kills were in melee.
Oh, really?
And yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we were just weird. We pulled out the combat daggers and we were just slitting throats. And he actually shot one of my guys to death with his shaman. Like, okay. He was rolling real good with his shaman. He got like 3 crits and a hit after rending and just killed a guy from full. So this was on Tomb World. Map one, which is the one you have the weird hallway with the teleporter, and you got to like breach into it from one side, and there's only one door into it from the other side. And then the other half of the map is kind of a shooting gallery, but it's very separated from the other side. Mm-hmm. And I realized you could do some funny banner strats around that teleporter, and it paid off. So that particular spot, it's this weird little cubby where you've got a hallway here. You can breach in. This is my side of the map on the bottom here, right? You can breach in from both sides here. The teleporter's right here. And then there's a door on the opponent's side. I was able to fit a model underneath the teleporter here. Like that, a 28 mil base just barely fits there. And then you can plant the banner on the other side. And then if you have a guy on the teleporter, they can't go over there because you can only have one guy on a teleporter at a time. Mm-hmm. So they can't touch your banner unless they kill that guy first. And that's kind of the idea. set up walls. So I had my mine layer up there first, and I kind of flubbed the way that strategy was supposed to go. But you introduce the first wall with your mine, and then they have to kill the mine layer. And then you can probably get somebody to take his place. That's not exactly how it played out. Felgor have their firefight ploy to charge another guy after they get a melee kill. It's kind of like a consolidation move. So he was able to plug the hole on the teleporter before I was able to do that. But anyways, it was a lot of fun teleporter combat. And we ended up with a bunch of goats charging a bunch of Kazurkin, and I charged a bunch of guys back. So I'm fighting like one dude with combat support. So I'm actually hitting on twos with my, which would normally be fours. And
you gotta love that. That's a good, a nice feeling.
But yeah, every time he was trying to kill a guy, he would need either like three hits or like a crit, and he would get neither of those things. He would just roll two or fewer hits. So I'd take a hit and parry him out. And every time I fought him, I would need, you know, three hits and I'd get it. And then I try to kill him. Every time I fought a frenzy goat, I rolled the crit I needed right away.
Nice.
Every time.
Did you find yourself taking the demo trooper a lot and using that mine?
Oh yeah. The mine layer is so much fun, especially on Tomb World. I love to play him around the teleporter because you can either, if he's on the teleporter, let's say, and your opponent has a guy there, you can drop the mine at your feet and then swap places and boom, you put them on the mine. And that mine hurts. It's 2d6 plus 3 damage. So on average 10, and it could kill a full health Marine if you roll well enough. But it's killing most operatives in the game. And if you don't feel like doing that, you could swap places first and then put the mine down on that other teleporter and then like dash away to safety. You can do some funny stuff with the teleporters. Nice little, like Looney Tunes kind of booby traps.
Nice. Yeah. The mine's always fun. I feel like it was never, most of the time when it went off, it was people jumping on it just for the hell of it. But that's a fun way to do it, is to teleport them into your own mine. So I like that. Yeah. Connor, round four. You're 2-1 at this point. Round four, you're going into Mark Perez and Kazurkin, actually. So you got to feel a little bit of the Kazurkin love yourself.
I did, yeah. It was a really great game. Me and Mark realized we've seen each other at events, you know, dozens of times, but have never actually played a game before. So that was really fun to finally get to roll some dice against him. Like you said, it was Kazurkin versus Nemesis Claw, and I was kind of spooked because I've been seeing Grant doing good with them. I know what they can do. And one of the best pieces they have as Nemesis Claw for, like, you know, like, A, we get out activated and they have a million guns and a lot of piercing and we don't have a way of ignoring that. And B, Nemesis Claw likes to fall back in the strategy phase, but Kazurkin can kind of be like, tough, I'm going to dash after you and you're still going to end up relatively close to me type of deal. And you know, the difference in that is like a single inch, they can still blast me with seasoned initiative, even if I'm in cover type of thing. So that's kind of what happened a lot. That game, Seize the Initiative is freaking brutal. Melta essentially got three shots off and killed two Marines, essentially, because the other Marine was like two health and stunned, so he's not going to do anything other than tap the point because we're playing loot. I managed to hold him very close game, like playing just like a little Night Lords classic, like holding the objective and doing nothing but running. But sadly, he had it through kill op and Envoy was really, really good there. He scored 6 points and it was a secret. So it was 9 point swing, essentially.
Nice.
So Connor, just a tip. for that interaction where you fall back in the strat phase and he chases you down.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a sweet spot where you can be that shuts down the strat phase dashes for Kazurkin. So they can only do the relocate ploy on guys who are 3 inches away from enemies. So there's kind of a dead zone for it. So if you're on, as long as you're on conceal, you can do your fallback. You want to stay within 3, but outside of 2, and then they can't move that guy up.
Gotcha. Good to know. I didn't know that. But yeah, that that might have to be the tech because Melted Guns chasing after you is pretty frightening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Connor ends up 2-2 and taking an L to Kazurkin. And spoiler, unfortunately, this is where Grant's run of undefeated comes to an end as Grant, you went into Barry and you lost 12-15. So against Barry Broad Death Watch. Tell us a little bit about this game.
Yeah, so I don't have a ton of practice into Death Watch. I think I fought her maybe 3 or 4 times since they've released, and I feel like I need more practice because they always surprise me when I fight them. But Barry took a team comp that I never even would have considered. he had the Marksman, which I've never seen on the table before. He took the Horde Slayer. You got to have the Watchmaster every time. He had the Disruptor because that's kind of key to shutting down CZ Initiative, because Omni Scramble does shut that down, by the way. And then the Aegis, which you need to have. Somebody who can survive the shooting, right? But that affected my tac op choice because the way the Marksman can guard, I wasn't confident that I could get an Envoy across the board. I figured he'd probably have the Marksman in a spot where he could, you know, it'd be really hard to play around his guard, is why I didn't take Envoy, and I totally should have. I took Martyrs instead. But I think if I took Envoy, I probably could have won it.
Yeah, at least in my little experience with it, Envoy seemed really, really reliable, especially if you can out-activate people.
Yeah, it's. I'm just mainly wary of taking it, especially on Tomb World. I don't know what number Tomb World it is, but it was a Tomb World map, so guarding was a thing.
Yeah, that's fair. That's
and
fair.
It makes it a lot harder to get your guy across unscathed when guard is a thing.
Yeah.
So I took Martyrs instead, but I definitely should have taken Envoy because Barry entirely refused a flank, and I could have just funneled a dude across that other side every turn for 2 points. But instead I was kind of starving for Martyrs tokens. And then where I really lost it, I think, is where Survival Instincts kicked in and I saved a guy who was standing on a point. I had the chance to bring him back and make sure he was not threatened, but I should have just left him there as bait. Because I hadn't revealed the card yet. If I had that token on that point, I might have been able to bring that one back too. But I never had an opportunity to score Martyrs outside of forcing it by laying the mine on my home objective and having my medic jump on it, which I think is hilarious. You can do that. the mine layer ignores his own mine, but your guys do not.
So you can martyr your own medic?
Yep. It's worth 2 points.
So Tyler, are you convinced you're gonna kit bash up a box of Kazurkin?
I don't think they're my play style, honestly.
I know.
I think they're cool. I was working on some Kazurkin for a minute, but I never finished them.
Yeah. Well, that's a great run, Grant. 3-1, yeah, especially
for sure.
Through Brandon Bean is not nothing to scoff at. So glad to hear that the caster can have a little more juice now. Any other tech that you found in like practice games or anything that you didn't get a chance to highlight that you can think of?
I think I pretty much covered it.
Cool. Yeah.
I guess the one last thing that you need to think of with Kazurkin is they have one of the longest, if not the longest threat range in the game, as long as they have initiative.
Yeah.
Because you have your strat phase dash and you can have a 7-inch move with your skill at arms and you've got the best comms in the game. And I guess I didn't mention that. So the Kazurkin comms can use the comms ability twice in an activation.
Yep.
And there's no range restriction and no visibility required. You can give it to anybody in the kill zone. So let's say you have a guy set up with 3 APL going into turn 2, you win initiative you essentially have, you have a 13 inch move and then the 2 inches to ignore cover. You've got a 15 inch threat range. And the board is not really big enough to hide from that in most cases. So just something to consider when you've got, when they have initiative, it's very difficult to hide from them.
Yeah, that's a lot of threat you can project. Now, do you, is this team you think you'd be playing for a little while, or are you gonna, was this kind of a one-off?
I think they are very fun. I'm probably gonna be sticking with them for a while. Cool. I just got my Murder Wing built up and I played 2 games with them. I thought I was gonna really like them, and the playstyle just doesn't really gel with me. I don't know. I don't think I'm patient enough to play the way that they need to play.
Okay.
When I thought they would kind of feel like legionaries, and they don't.
Well, you played a lot of legionaries last edition, right? You and I played at Clash last year, legionaries on Rekkas. So you think it's just they because they're not kind of unga munga, and you do have to be a little more patient with them, it sounds like?
Well, I mean, okay, I guess my 2 games were both on Tomb World. I guess you could probably do whatever you want on Volcus.
Sure, yeah.
Maybe that'd be more fun, just not for my opponent.
Yeah. So let's have you weigh in on the ban or no ban. Where do you...
I'm just not really on board with bans in general. I feel like if the team's out there and the rules are out, then I don't see a reason to not allow them. I mean, yeah, they are really strong, but... I think our community can deal with it. I think for the most part, people are self-policing to the point where they're not going to make it unfun for the opponent.
Yeah.
My only hope now is if Games Workshop is noticing countries and places doing bans and stuff, hey, maybe try and do a little bit more beta testing with the rules before we put them out in the books. I know that they have a long timetable before we ever see them, but, you know.
I wonder how all of this single seasons teams would be unnerfed against each other. You know, like bring them back at their peak, just rule book, no changes, and see how it tests out. Because every time one of these new teams comes out, everyone goes, "Oh, it's the most broken thing ever." And it's like if you compared it only in a closed ecosystem of those teams, how would it pan out? You know.
I think it's got to be, I mean, there's like 50 teams in the game right now. It's got to be tough to kind of balance them against each other. But we do seem to have are we having more and more broken teams? But very, very strong teams.
So what would be the pool of problem teams? Like how many are in there out of, you know, the whole history of the game? Which ones did the community decide like, okay, these guys are problems? Like
Pathfinders were like
pseudo banned, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pathfinders were like the first major one.
Yeah. You know, I mean, like, there was a lot of teams that were a problem. I don't think there's been, like, any teams that, like, have, like, been so bad, though, that you didn't see major tournaments running them. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, are these teams bad? Yes. Are there still bad dice? Yes. Can you outplay them? Yes. So.
Yeah, but I mean, like, how many teams were out there where, like, you generally, like... the only reaction to seeing them on the board is an eye roll, right? Like, so like Pathfinders and Cold Sun Release were kind of like that, right?
Yeah.
Cannot play. Uh-huh.
Felgor.
Wolf Scouts. Were Felgor like that? I think they probably just hit the first nerf when I started.
Yeah, Felgor were pretty insane. You know.
Sanctifiers.
They still kind of are.
Yeah.
Sanctifiers, yes.
Yep.
Definitely Rattlings. Rattlings.
Canoptic Circle.
Canoptic Circle.
Yeah, I already got them.
Were Hyrotech? I can't recall.
Hyrotech not at launch, but they became great, though.
Yeah. And now we got Murder Wing.
Yeah. Void Dancing were a huge problem.
Yeah.
You know.
Warp Coven for third edition.
Yep.
Oh, true.
Warp Legion.
Legionaries they never included Warp Coven at third.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Legionaries.
Death Guard were an issue for a minute. You know?
Like, I don't know if I would ever would have counted them really in that club.
Like, yeah, I think it was more of like the healing guy was a problem, but they quickly addressed that. But it wasn't so much that I felt like the team was annoying, it was just like that single interaction.
I guess they can be in the club.
Mm-hmm.
But we're up to 12. out of like 50 ish.
Yeah. That's a 1 in 5 ratio. Like, that's not terrible.
1 in 5. 1 in 5. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm trying to look through who else. Hunter Glade.
They're doing real good right now.
They're doing good right now. Yeah. What about Celestians?
I don't think so. Like, I'm not hearing
that they're that problematic yet, but I don't see anybody running them just yet. I just started building them yesterday. I just got three of them built so far.
But throw Goremongers and Raveners in there too.
Yeah, absolutely. Both are gnarly, you know.
So 20-25% of the teams, 20% of the teams maybe that come out or have major issues.
I kind of feel like one of the things is the new teams, it feels like they do everything, right? Like there's an operative that does everything and you have ploys that let you do everything also. And I feel like some of the identities of the teams are not as strong, you know, like it's a little bit of rehashing and a little bit of we need to, you know, to give an operative that does this and gives the whole team this, you know, playing into Sisters recently was crazy, just like the amount of stuff that they can do. And it's the same thing with Murderwing and the same thing with all of the new teams, you know, even like partway through last season, I would say. It just gets like really, really crazy. And I like, I hope we see more strong teams with like strong identities, you know, like, Canoptic Circle is a good example of one, but like, I want to see more weird stuff, more different stuff, not just like people having like a shit ton of bonuses. Like, oh yeah.
All right. Well, give me an example of something weird you want to see. Kill team wise.
I want to see a team that sacrifices their own player. Like they can like kill their own dudes to buff a guy.
Oh, like the classic Werebearers. Everyone like Werebearers, Cultists, and a Possessor too. That can like transfer soul power or something.
Yeah,
absolutely. That'd be such a cool.
Sacrifice their enemy in the right circumstances.
That too. That like maybe one of the guys kills a guy with a sacrificial dagger or something. But like it's a specific leader, so not everyone can do it, but you. You know, that'd be a cool trade-off. That is one thing I definitely missed from the Compendium was the Traitor Marine team, just because it was fun to have different profiles, like, so drastically between what could be on your team.
Yeah, absolutely.
Grant, looking over the list of teams that came to the tournament, I don't see any Murderwing. Was Murderwing banned?
They were. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Livia, we had Olivia on last week, and she was talking about, at first she was waffling. She was like, nah, I don't think I'm going to. And then, like, I think afterwards she was like, yeah. So we're, and Celestians weren't back. We're okay, though? Or
no, just the first box.
Yeah, the whole box was banned.
The whole box. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good way to do it. Like, if you're going to do it, ban the whole box, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So. It just sucks. It feels bad that you can't play with your fun toys. So yep,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Take some more time painting them, you know.
That's why we'll never ban a new team unless it's an AdMech team, because Chuck won't want me to be happy.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Connor can't have nice things.
Speaking of nice things, though,
screw
kill team. This has been a great weekend. We got Nick on the wire, which was honestly the most exciting thing of Sunday beyond the tournament. Actually, that's not true. There's also the new Trial of the Seven, which was incredible. Oh, Game of Thrones TV when it's good is so fucking good. But Nick's watching The Wire, so it's an HBO renaissance for me right now. And best of all, Games Workshop gave me an amazing Valentine's Day / President's Day weekend present. Thank you, Games Workshop. I love you so much. You've never done anything wrong.
I thought you were going to thank someone else.
No, God, no. I mean, no.
That's where I thought this was going for a second. I was going
to
be like,
make me out to sound like I'm.
Are we going to have to kick you off the podcast?
God, fuck no. Dude,
wait, who? I'm lost. Who? What?
I thought he was going to thank the president because he's like, you know,
Games Workshop, baby.
He does love President's Day.
Yeah. Chuck out here trying to make it say, like, oh, I love President's Day because of a certain president. And I'm like, no, I just love it because it gives me a day off and there's nothing else attached to the holiday.
That's why I was listening to NPR and they're like, happy President's Day to those who celebrate. Who the fuck celebrates
President's Day? What do you mean celebrate President's Day? Like, oh boy, I'm a huge fan of Warren Harding or some shit.
I think that's like an NPR style dig, right?
They do.
Like that's like we can't say anything mean, but we'll say happy President's Day to those of you that celebrate.
You know, weirdos. You know what? I will say I do wish we had more president style holidays where it's just a reason to have a day off of work. But there's no like go buy anyone in your family like a gift type thing. There's no financial attachments to it. It's just, hey, have a day off. We need like more holidays like that.
Also, you don't have to like gather with family.
That either. Too.
Like,
it's just an
Thanksgiving,
easy,
Easter, like, Christmas,
those are fun. 4th of July, you know, like.
Yeah, we need to start pulling out stuff out of the calendar and be like, Flag Day, you know what? I really love
Flag Day. Yeah, shout out to Flag Day. Flags can be cool, man.
Yeah. Speaking of flags, why aren't you flying your flag, Connor?
My back the Baja or back the dude?
No, your Trump flag.
Oh, why would I be flying?
Your back the blast flag. Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be embarrassed, buddy. We all know. So.
All know what?
Nothing. Well, Grant, any last thoughts on Kasterkin or where the meta sits right now? Like you're much smarter than the three of us combined at rules and where teams are. So, I'll give you the floor. So,
I don't know if I really have any insights here. Like,
all right, maybe
if we're talking about meta and like tier lists and that kind of thing. I don't believe in tier lists. I think it more comes down to individual players, but. Mm-hmm. I don't really got anything for you there. Sorry.
That's all right.
No hot takes. I love it. So
no hot takes. So, well, yeah, well, Grant, well, thanks for joining us.
I was going to say, Grant, we always like to ask guests then what would be a good kill team you'd like to see added into the game? If you have no crazy tier lists, hot takes, what's a hot take team?
I don't got anything off the top of my head here either.
Damn it, Grant.
Well, that's all right.
Yeah. I am hoping to see a Grey Knights team sometime soon. I think Grey Knights are sick, but for sure. We'll see if they actually do get in here.
I don't
know what they would do with them. They don't. I feel like they wouldn't be that interesting, but I do. I would like to see some faction representation.
I saw someone recently say that they didn't think Grey Knights belong in Kill Team, and that's a take I haven't seen before. So,
wow,
yeah.
I feel like Grey Knights kind of really, I mean, you know more with the lore than I do, Tyler. Aren't they really like kind of kill team?
Yeah,
I mean, perfect.
They like operate in strike squads, you know? I mean, like they really only hunt like demons or demonic threats. So like, but like there's always like a lore reason. Like they got to kill everyone because there's demons on the planet or some shit. Like they're known for like purging planets. They're psychopaths, like all space marines, you know? Like don't trust any of them.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Grant, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate the Kasterkin input. I am excited to. I have mine on the shelf over there. I'm excited to try them out again. I'm trying to figure out team. It's time to play everybody's favorite game. What team should Chuck play? And then not listen to Tyler and Connor and do whatever the fuck I want. So
nice.
Mm-hmm. Grant, anything you want to shout out before we dip out of here?
Again, not really. I'm not big on social media, so I don't really have anything to plug right now. That is all.
That's good. Just stay out of it. It's cesspool.
One question I did have for Tyler though is, how about them World Eater shirts?
That's what I want to know too.
They are coming soon. While I get moved, you know, I had to delay them a little bit. So I actually just talked to the print shop. They're getting ready to put them into print here shortly. So
hell yeah.
Yeah.
And Grant, you designed that, right?
Absolutely. So yeah, I was going to shout that out here in a second. So, yeah. Just, you know, he's like, this would be a dope idea. And then you basically like went from like, just like a quick little like Photoshop to like a full SVG and everything. Like this is some of like the best files I've ever got from someone, just like to make it easy.
Really?
Too. Yeah, absolutely. So
yeah, I just learned that was my first foray into, well, I was using GIMP was the software for that, but just figuring out how those tools work, just learning on the fly, and it turned out fine, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's expected to be super broken in some way, but I guess it was fine.
Yeah. No, it looks good. So it was everything needed to get a good quality print. So
yeah. Awesome.
Heck yeah. Well,
all right, Tyler, tell the people where we can find us.
Yeah. You can find us at Vox Cascadia podcast on Patreon, Vox Cascadia on YouTube, Vox Cascadia on Instagram, me at Lowbrow Minis, Chuck at Painting Cave Minis, Connor at Spanaway. And yeah, we love you. Good night.